Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, Second Counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today we will be talking about family councils. This is actually a second part of this topic. I'm joined today by two wonderful guests, and since this is the second session of this topic, I already know them, and you're in for a treat. This is going to be a great experience. We have joining us today Carol F. McConkie. She is the first counselor in the Young Women's General Presidency. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm looking forward to the second part of this discussion about family councils. And for those who perhaps didn't hear the first part, Carol, just introduce your family very quickly.
Well, I'm married to Oscar McConkie. We met in Arizona. We're married in the Mesa Temple. We have seven children, all of whom are married and having children of their own. So, and we just had our 25th grandchild on Monday.
Oh, congratulations. What
Thank
an exciting
you.
Time. Circle of life. That's great. We also have joining us today is Mark D. Ogletree, who is a professor of church history and doctrine at Brigham Young University. And you also work with families. Maybe you can tell a little bit about that, but first introduce your family. And
yeah, my wife is Janie, and we've been married for about 28 years now. We have eight children and then two grandchildren and one on the way. And yes, besides my job at BYU, I do have a small little counseling practice that I see couples and families in a little bit. So
that's great.
In trouble.
So when we draw upon our experience, mostly from our own personal experience of being involved in families, both when we were being raised prior to marriage, I think of how much that influenced my own life as watching my upbringing and the way my parents dealt with us. And then also from our own families, our church callings. It's interesting as we have opportunities to go about. Carol, you go throughout the world dealing with young women and ecclesiastical leaders, and surely that has informed some of the way that you look at certain things.
Absolutely. And when it comes to being able to observe people in their places and their circumstances and recognizing the differences of circumstances and people and places and the unity that comes because of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Isn't that nice? And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's the whole purpose when we start to look at programs like this. It's not simply to go through and say, here are the five easy steps to be able to make sure that your calendar is filled appropriately, but it's more, how does the gospel inform and guide us in our lives? And one of the things I like about that, and I think that this will come out as we're talking today, is the fluidity of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It doesn't just go through on a Sunday experience, but this informs everything that we do, or it should at least. So when we start to talk about counseling, I think of our last episode, we talked about how the Lord encourages us to counsel, and we shared several scriptures of reasoning together, coming to an understanding, invoking agency, allowing individuals to become part of this. We talked about Doctrine and Covenants section 88, of being able to be edified of all these wonderful principles. And so when we look at the councils of family councils, that also includes marriage councils. And this might sound odd, but let's start there as a starting point. Let's talk just briefly about counseling within a marriage.
I love counseling with my husband. It's my very favorite thing to do. When we started out, I think I mentioned this in the prior segment, but we talked about our vision for our family. We did that whether we were at home or in the car or wherever we were going, because there were times we just having that time together, focusing on one another, was just always so sweet. It got a little trickier as we started to bring children into the home, but we did the same thing. We would make arrangements and go for the walk, or put the babies in the back seat of the car in their car seats and go for a drive. That was back when gasoline wasn't quite so expensive.
This is interesting, though. You're saying things like it was very fluid almost. It was it wasn't a formal experience in many cases, but the process of counseling was happening at different times, maybe sometimes spontaneously. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. And really, when your interactions are always geared toward improving your lives and moving forward, almost every time you interact, there's a certain amount of counseling that's going on,
or should be going on.
as you're helping one another. Most recently, I've been helping my husband understand his iPhone and his brand new iPhone. And there's so many different levels, and sometimes they're big and kinds of conversations and counseling that involve things of eternal significance. And sometimes they're just assisting you on the day-to-day, filling needs and just taking care of one another in your marriage. And that's just so important and so fun to do.
I like this.
I love what you're saying, Carol. I was thinking as you were talking about something Cicero said, and I only know that because I read it in a talk, but that marriage is the first bond of society. Marriage is also the first bond of the family. And as the marriage goes, so goes the family. And if that marriage is healthy, then the outcomes for the children are just so much greater. And so if you can feed that marriage and have that couple be nurturing each other and talking and counseling, as you said, and if they're happy and the kids sense that and there's a synergy when they talk about raising their family and goals and all that kind of stuff, I think it's just – it's how it should be. In other words, it's kind of an inside-out approach versus an outside-in approach where – parents get so wrapped up in their kids' lives and the busy schedule that they just neglect themselves.
Right.
And it's like a tree with a hollow trunk. I mean, it's just going to collapse. But if you can nurture that prime relationship through counseling and nurturing each other and talking and teaching and healing and building and edifying, then it's just everyone wins.
This is good. I'm sure that there's some people that might be listening and they're saying, well, how do I start this experience? And so they might be newlyweds or without children, or they might be families and they're saying, how do we do this family counseling? They're saying, I'm going to try this. But if I understand this correctly, Mark, and I like this principle, is one of the best ways if you're going to start with a family counsel is to make sure that you're actually learning to counsel together as husband and wife first and practice that experience. And as you do that, then it helps the family. So that, I think that's really good counsel, pun intended.
Family benefits in every way. I think in a healthy marriage counsel, there's talk about – it's not always about problems. Hopefully, it's very proactive.
This is a good point.
And it's – where are we going to go on our date this week? And would you like me to plan that? How are we, how are we doing on this? Where do we need to be? The actual, for our family, the way that the marriage council started was because I was in trouble. And what happened is I was walking out the door one night to go to a church meeting and my wife said, where are you going? And I said, to this stake meeting. And she said, you never told me about that. And I said, yeah, we talked about it. She said, no, we didn't. From that point on, that was the first thing on the agenda. Let's coordinate our schedules. And from that day, we've never had that kind of miscommunication. If it's, once again, proactive, we're starting here on the front end, and you can solve a lot more problems by not having problems happen in the first place.
Nice.
By being proactive.
Prepare and prevent rather than repair and repent. Carol?
Exactly. And interestingly, it's the same applies when dealing with your children. As our oldest was approaching her teenage years, my husband and I quickly came to the recognition that we really did need to be unified in our approach in dealing with some of the issues that would arise and kind of anticipate what might be the challenges. I remember the issue of curfew coming up.
Right.
Kind of caught us off guard, actually. When our oldest came home and we counseled with her about curfew, she went off to bed, but my husband and I continued to sit up and talk about our opinions so that we could understand one another and come to a unity of thought on how we wanted to handle the situation. And that was a really important thing. That was probably that was more important than counseling with our teenage daughter at that time, because we needed to be together.
This is good.
And we needed to understand one another's experiences and how we were raised, and also understand what each one of us understood about our daughter, who was entering this phase of her life.
This is really good. As a matter of fact, I couldn't help but think of, as you both were talking, I'm thinking, okay, wait a second. What's happening here is so critical, because sometimes we talk about our experiences, and sometimes the experiences I had as youth are not the experiences I want my children to have. So it's not like, well, this is the right way to do it. It's like, wait a second. And I'm thinking about this, hearing my wife share different experiences. And sometimes what we end up doing is not my way or her way. It's our way. It's a unique way to do this. I also think of where children pit parents together. So if we go and ask for something from dad and he says no, the children always will say, at least in my class, I say, what do you do then? And they say, well, you go ask mom. But you reverse the order. You go to mom first and then you go – or whatever it might be. But I learned early in our marriage is sometimes I didn't know the answer. And rather than just say – winging it, you know, kind of thing. It says, I need to talk to your mother about this. Or I'll say, have you talked to your mother? And then they'll say, yeah, I have. And I go, well, then I need to talk to her as well. And so our children, it was raised where it doesn't do any good to pit us against each other because they know we're going to end up coming together. Or many times we'll walk together and we'll all talk together. And then sometimes we'll have to say, Mom and I need to talk about this a little bit more. Give us a few minutes because we needed to do some things which would have been most appropriate to counsel together first before we brought in the third or the fourth party to counsel as well. So these are really, really good elements. The scriptures say that marriage, we should leave, cleave, and become one. And in many cases, a lot of different religious viewpoints on becoming one, they look at that only as an intimate experience, as the consummation of an intimacy. But I love the fact that in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we understand that the becoming one in a marriage is far more than just the physical intimacy or the sexual intimacy. It's the intimacy, and I mean that quite seriously, both emotionally, spiritually, in our conversations. And that comes through this process of counseling one with another.
Yeah.
So I think that's important.
Well, and I mean, that was something we learned early on in our marriage. And I remember feeling like when we were married really young, and my husband was, we were both still in undergraduate school. And as I understood what his career goals were, they became my career
goals. This is important.
And as he understood what my goals for our home and family were, they became his goals too. And I remember then, of course, as we talked it over and understood one another, we always invited the Lord into this companionship because we knew that we wouldn't achieve any of this without his help. And so this unity became a divine unity. And we fasted together and prayed together to be able to achieve the goals that we sought after together as one. And the power in that, the spirit in that, bound us together. And so if he was rejected from a school he was applying to, I cried. And I mean, we felt as one in this process as we went through these years together.
This is so important. And I love what you're saying here is when it comes down to it, first of all, when we were bound together, that's covenantal relationship. So we're bound by a divine power, but covenant also includes our Father in heaven. So when you start to look at the way that the church will give practical guidelines of being able to manage living married experiences as well as family experiences, so often it's, this is where you would counsel with your husband and wife and the Lord to make decisions. This isn't just two individuals. We decided to do this, but it's what does the Lord have to say as well, and how do we come together? And that's through counseling, the process of reasoning together, understanding. And I really like what you're saying there, and that's where we start to see this unique unity coming because it's bound upon covenantal basis of the Lord's power enabling two individuals to do this well. Now, just let's move forward to families then is, okay, well, what do we do when we start to add? Carol, you mentioned it gets a little more complex when you start to add children because now all of a sudden our flow might be interrupted, so to speak. First of all, I'd like to get your comments or your thoughts on formal versus informal counsels. You mentioned where it could be walks, etc. Now, the reason I bring this up, and I'd like you to explore this a little bit and share, is some people think that it's either or. So some people say, well, gee, I get from this program, it's not scheduling. But yet, if you listen carefully, we talked about scheduling. And sometimes it's important to sit down in sometimes a formal or a set time and say, we're scheduling our family because this is the only way we're going to survive. So let's do appointments. Who needs the car? How is this going to work? So, and then some people say, oh, that's family council and that's what we do. And other people say, no. What we do is we talk on walks as if you don't have the other going on. So some people think that if you're doing scheduling, you're not going on walks. Thoughts, formal, informal moments of counseling, especially when we start to look at marriage and within families.
I think that both have a place, you know, okay, for sure. But I do think as we're talking and I'm listening to both of you, I'm just aware that probably the greatest maybe spiritual and family experiences in our life have been when it's more of an informal setting. And I think that this is a great tool that parents could cultivate, but when our kids want to talk, we have to be ready. And it could be at 2 in the morning or, you know, and oftentimes we want to schedule that. But But some of those random, you know, just off-the-cuff conversations, I think parents need to be ready to engage in that. I even think with my wife, I think for me personally, the most meaningful counseling type of experiences we've ever had together has probably been in the car as we've traveled or talked. And
sure.
You know, so.
Because the opportunity is there.
Yeah, the opportunity is there. But so, boy, I think we can't rule out the informal, but having some structure and having a schedule is helpful too.
So maybe what we're saying then is we don't rule out the formal either. I think sometimes things like father's interviews comes up and some fathers will do this. And I'll have to admit, I've done that my whole fatherly life, as I do it every Fast Sunday with every one of my children. So it's a formal. And then I hear some people say, well, actually, what we do is we like talk out in the backyard where we're playing catch. And I'm thinking to myself, so in other words, what you're assuming is I don't go in the backyard and play catch and chat either. I think that what happens is I like what you said, Mark, is they have purposes, and yet we shouldn't lop one off for the other and be flexible and allow what is necessary to meet our needs. Is that fair?
I think absolutely. One of the things that our best informal time for counseling was at the dinner table because everyone is happy and full and content usually.
And ironically, what's going out of society today? Families eating together, which is tragic.
But it's tragic because that family dinner time is such sacred time and is becoming more and more so. And it allows for the coming together and the sharing and the conversation that's probably not going to happen in any other way. So critically important. But all that to say, that was some of our best counseling. And it could be anyone bringing up any topic.
Okay. So in counseling with families and even in marriages, is there a taboo topic? Is that where I'm building off what you said, any topic. Is that true? In family councils, we should be able to talk about any topic, right?
Yes, I think so. We absolutely. We are in this for all for one and one for all in any circumstance about any issue. And so, yes.
So what about things like laws of chastity? Is that a family council thing or is that an edict thing?
I think we teach our children together as a group those principles, you know, from the For Strength of Youth wherever else we're teaching from. But I also think that, once again, some of those meaningful teaching that could happen in that setting with chastity is the one-on-one stuff.
Okay,
sure.
So it could be one or the other, but still it's the counseling process. I think in a sense, for example, is sometimes when we talk about things like the law of chastity, it's a do-don't experience. Don't do this. Let's counsel together. Don't do this, 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 this. And in my case, when I was growing up, is my dad was from the South and he would use terms that I didn't even recognize. He goes, don't do this. And I'm like, okay, I don't even know what that is, but for sure I won't do that. Point being, and I'm not faulting my father because I think this happens in a lot of families and in church settings, is that's not counseling necessarily. And so the process is the reasoning together to understand. And so I think sometimes even with intimacy or the laws of chastity, no topics taboo, is how do we counsel together to come to an understanding of why we do certain things, why Heavenly Father asks us to and not to do. Those are meaningful. What about finances?
Oh, same thing. Those are critically important, especially as we're trying to help our children understand the law of tithing and help them understand the blessings that come from living financially sound principles and paying tithing regularly off the top. And there's great blessings that come into their lives. And the greatest blessing is then seeing them begin to take responsibility for these commandments in their lives.
That's nice. So the counseling together could be telling about the law of tithing, helping them understand the principles of law of tithing, as far as that goes, but also invite and provide opportunities to practice or engage in the law of tithing.
I know, Matt, one time one of our daughters is a cheerleader, and that becomes very expensive. But she just didn't know why we just couldn't write a check for $700, you know, for this event she had to do. And so I set her down and we went through the family budget, you know, and showed her what comes in, what comes out. And you should have seen how big her eyes were. I mean, that was, you know, a wake-up call for her to realize that money doesn't grow on trees, as we say. But wow. Anyway, so yeah, we talked a minute ago about Elder Irene, who actually sits and balances the checkbook every month with one of his kids. At least he did when they were
right.
When they were that age, you know, and involved them in the family finances. I thought, what a great thing.
And I remember, I remember Elder Hales telling the story at conference, I believe it was, about the family gathered around and deciding they wanted to take a vacation and then everyone budgeting for that vacation, understanding the family finances and how to discern the difference between their needs and wants so that they could diminish their wants and really budget for this family vacation.
This is great. And think about what was just said here. This is really powerful. If we look at, here's a practical application of what they're doing, but also there's a principle here of learning needs versus wants. And sometimes that's where the counseling part comes in, is helping individuals understand this isn't just about what we want. This is about what we need to be doing, et cetera, and how to manage both. So this is really great. So when we start to talk about setting family visions and we do these things within counsel, formal, informal, what are things families are saying, I want to try this. I want to be better at this. We're not counseling. Some families that are listening might be saying, holy cow, I didn't realize this, but we're doing counseling all the time. I'm actually doing family counsels, and I thought that I was bereft of any type of obedience. So what might you offer to individuals who are saying, I'd like to get this going. How do I start in my marriage? We haven't really been doing what you're describing here. How do I start that? Or even with families, we've got a young family, or my kids are grown, so I guess it's too late. I hear that a lot is, oh, I wish that I would have known this earlier. And for me, I don't think that there's ever a too late experience with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So lend some ideas here. How do we get started with this?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to start where we are and pat ourselves on the back a little bit for the things that we're doing well.
Okay, nice.
And recognize that, of course, there's a certain amount of counseling that goes on just by virtue of the communication in a family to keep a family running and going well. And so recognize that first and then start talking about, so what is our vision? What is our goal? What do we want to achieve? My husband and I as grandparents now, and no children living in the home except for the married couple that has to live in the basement for a while they get their financial legs. We counsel together all the time about who is needing what.
Good.
And how we might be able to assist them in ways that are not intrusive, that are most helpful, and that will bless the lives of our children from a different household.
I like this.
And it is never too late. It really is. If we were to start, if we hadn't had one counsel, but we started now, it would make a difference. It would bless lives.
I like this. As a matter of fact, when you were talking, I was thinking, you know what, actually, is we've been trying to counsel from the very beginning. That first Monday home evening counseling experience started us off on the right foot, perhaps. But in a way, as our family changes, and as you were mentioning this and the complexity, my wife and I sit down and say, what should we be doing now as parents of married children? And I thought, well, wait a second, how is that different than somebody who's just starting counseling for the first time? Because it's really the next stage. What should we be doing here with what's our responsibility to family with our children who have children? Should we be gathering our family and teach? How do we do this? Well, we've been doing that all along, but actually that's the same starting point for someone else is saying, oh, we're going to start now. What do we do? Assess. I like this. This is really good. Mark?
You know, I'm thinking of maybe the young family, you know, of, okay, how do you, if you've never done this, it's really simple. We don't have to make it too complex. First, like Carol said, you've probably been doing it already and not even known.
Right.
But second, it could be as simple as we sing a song, we have a prayer, we teach a gospel principle, and we go through the calendar for the week and talk about, you know, what are some of the activities. Maybe we plan something fun to do as a family on Saturday, and it could be that simple, you know, to start with.
Good. I like this. And so if we keep our options open, assess, see the good points, and then also listen to counsel from prophets, seers, and revelators and say, how could I improve upon this? This is really great stuff. A lot of traction going on. And keeping our options open as far as that goes. But once again, right at the core is keeping the process of counseling at the heart. I think that that's the important part. Any other ideas or suggestions you give to families?
Matt, one thing that I've noticed more in my counseling practice is it's amazing how many people have goals in their life. They run triathlons, they run marathons, they want to become millionaires by the time they're 40 and write a best-selling book. But how few people actually have goals in their family. You know, how few people have goals in their marriage and in their family, which is the most important aspect of their lives.
Right.
And so to have a goal in a marriage, it doesn't have to be 12. We could have one or two. And to have a goal as a family, it could be one or two goals. And to be progressing and to be improving and to be, you know, every week evaluated and how we doing on this, That's how we grow, and that's how we become more like the Savior.
This is good. You mentioned earlier about like family mission statements and mottos and stuff. We actually have one in our family. We actually have a thing called a family constitution,
well.
You know, kind of a thing. And it was crafted when our children were really young because they knew more what it was to be a citizen of a country than to be a member of our family. And we thought we better do something. And our son said, "You mean have a constitution?" We said, "Okay, great." So we drafted this. But my point being is we actually go through that on our family home evenings is we read a small section and we do exactly what you're saying is I didn't think of this before is, okay, how are we doing and how can we be better at creating or succeeding in fulfilling our mission as a family? And those have been the best discussions is not just having a read the rule. It's now what can we be doing here and how are we doing on this as a family?
I think it's a great idea. And not only talking about it, but exemplifying it. I think the example piece is a really important part of counseling because if we are asking them, we need to be emulating what it is we are asking our family members to do.
Nice.
And that speaks sometimes louder than anything we say, as we know.
I like this a lot. This is really good. Other thoughts? We're right to the edge of our time, but this is so good as I know that I can – this is the sad part about radio is I can see you both and those who are listening cannot. And I can see your enthusiasm for this and you light up when you're starting to talk about this. And so I feel and can see that you believe that this is an important principle within families and within marriages. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other principle that I feel that is so critical to good family councils is the love. That they feel the love, that they know that even if they're not acting so lovable, that they know they are loved and that they have a place and that their identity is critically important to us and that they understand who they are and how they fit into this family. We used to say, remember who you are and act accordingly. We used to say, you're a McConkie. McConkies don't do that or McConkies do this. And that they understood that identity and they felt connected and bound together in love and in unity.
That's good because statements like that must be taken within the love that it's intended. Otherwise, it might seem not very meaningful to some or it might feel a little domineering in others. But within love, it really gives a sense of purpose. Our Father in Heaven does that. You are a child of God. This is what children of God do, and this is what children of God don't do. You know, I love it. It's an invitation to come out of life as unscathed as possible, being in the world but not defined by it. We're not citizens of this one. Mark?
I'm thinking of in Stephen R. Covey's book on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, I guess. But he told the story of a family that they all had matching T-shirts, you know, and they were on some trip. And their car broke down and they were in a mechanic shop or whatever. And the mechanic who was working on their car looked up and saw this family with their matching. And he said, "You guys are kind of like a team." And they said, "That's right." You know, and it kind of really hit him that we are a team. And it turns out later that one of those kids, you know, was diagnosed with leukemia and talked about how as the family went through that, that they all had their shirts on. You know, they had their matching shirts on as the family went through this trial. And you know, the son made it, but the nurse has even commented of this family's like a team. They come into the hospital, they got their shirts on there.
This is good.
And this is what we're trying to do is we're trying to be unified and work together for common goals.
Well, I'm glad that this came up because I think that that's the core of what we've been talking about is the process of becoming one with our Father in Heaven, becoming one with another, whether that's in a marriage, husband and wife, or within a family. And I'm also grateful for another reason when you brought up this concept of team is sometimes on a team, you might have some players that are playing exceptionally well. And sometimes on a team, you have players that are, they're having an off day or they've been in a slump, but they are still part of the team. And so the way I love that good teams, they rally around those who are struggling and they're still on the team and they're still welcomed and they're still loved and they're still valued, even though they might not be performing at their position the way that they could be, et cetera. And I think that counseling, this is a good point to bring up is sometimes you might be saying, I'm going to do family counseling and you have everybody on board except two, you know, so what would you do? What do you do in situations like that?
You move forward with faith.
Move forward with faith, and you do what the Lord does.
You invite. You always invite. Yeah. You know, and then you keep moving.
And some people say, "How many times are you supposed to invite?" I did it twice already, and they're still not receptive. But you know this. We're all disciples, and we're family members. Is you invite and you invite and you invite and you continue to invite, and you reason. I love this. Is I am so grateful for Heavenly Father who has not grown tired of me in asking questions and has not grown tired of reasoning with me to understanding, you know. And so when we look at that, I can't help but think as if I could just be a little bit more like my Father in heaven in my fatherly and husband roles or in my discipleship roles, is we continue to reason, we continue to work together, we continue to plan with the effort for one thing and nothing else but to become one. And I like this team concept. Well, thank you so much for your comments. I have learned a lot and much to think about, and perhaps that's where the real traction starts, as we think and then we adapt, we seek guidance, and we say, how do we counsel together within our families and with our Father in heaven? So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.